Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This agricultural program was recorded the 12th day of February.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, and there you'll find a way to purchase your tickets, just $25, for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting to be held at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, on the 10th day of March. That's the second Tuesday. It's a USDA report day, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. We'll have a dozen of our regular on-air analysts taking up the corn, soybean, and cash grain markets, along with a look at agricultural futures with Sue Martin, the livestock sector with Chris Hurt from Purdue University, and land values with Murray Wise. It's a great day, includes a Beef House lunch, all for just $25. Over in Covington, Indiana. Buy your tickets at 217-333-7300 during regular business hours. That's 217-333-7300. Or online right now at willag.org. By the way, our panelists today on Commodity Week include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. And Brian, let's start with you. Are there any trends, seasonal or otherwise, that you see in the month of February in the grain elevator business?
Well, I think movement is generated by two different things. One, cash price is the focus of most farmers, and obviously $4 corn seems to be the magical number they're waiting for. In the meantime, in our area, the word free tends to come up a lot as far as free delayed price, ability to move grain where they don't have to price it. We have encouraged the growers and the end user as well, because movement has been stagnant since the first of the year, to watch basis, because basis has been getting firmer as the end user has to have needs met, and there just hasn't been enough producer movement the first month and a half into the 2015 year to satisfy the demand base. So I think that's something that we have to be mindful of, because as we move forward, we know we have plentiful stocks. And at some point in time, when the farmer does decide to move the grain, there's going to be a significant amount of pressure, not only on the Board of Trade, but also on the basis.
Why do you think that producers have been so stubborn?
Well, I think they saw the opportunity a couple different times to sell $4 cash corn prior to the January 12th crop report. And at that time, obviously thinking we could still move another 10 to 15 cents higher, not enough execution was done. And now they're kind of chasing a runaway market, trying to know that the market senses, not only as the fund at that time was longer and since has reduced his overall length in the corn pit, they also know the farmer is a natural long, and because of that, they're chasing the ability of something that may or may not occur.
All right, so that gets us to looking forward in the acreage numbers. I think that's one of the may or may not have occurs. There are lots of different numbers out there, Wayne, at this point. I was talking to Daryl Good earlier in the week. His corn number is actually above the trade. He's at 89, I don't remember whether it's 0.3 or 0.7, but above 89 million acres for corn. The trade's at 88. Some are thinking it will be less than that. But the calculations I see normally put the size of the crop around 13.4 or 13.5, no matter what. They just use higher yields or lower yields, and it all comes in at that. And that gives us, what, a 1.5 billion bushel carryout or thereabouts. Does this give you hope that there may be resilience in the corn market? Not if a pop, but maybe some staying power at the $4 level?
Well, I think, Todd, that does give us a little hope. It does say that if we see some weather problems along the way, if we can actually reduce that just a little bit, well, then we can see some pops in the market, and that's exactly what we're all hoping for. We're hoping that we have to have a chance here to want to get up to buy some acres to get up to that 89.5 million acres, because like you said, the government number's around 88 right now, and so we need to buy a few acres to do that, and that's what's keeping this new crop corn above the 410 for right now. And I think that it's going to take a 420, 25 to 440 before we see a lot of farmer movement for that and to switch them back on acres.
Hey, Pete, what do you do with producers once they get their crop insurance set, or even maybe before that? Are you able to give them a natural strategy that uses their crop insurance in conjunction with something in the futures markets in order to protect themselves?
Well, when they buy the insurance, that's a put that they're buying, but it's going to be at a low price this year. So you're going to need to be able to look at what can we do to add to that. And it depends on where those prices come in at the end of February of what you can look at to add to or to protect, whatever that is.
And how much of the crop do you like to try to protect?
Well, I'd like to protect at least half of it in some manner right now because of the potential of the huge crop we're going to grow this year, South America, record corn and beans, projection of good weather here, record crops. Just the world has plenty of everything, and if we grow good crops again, what's the bottom end going to be? So we need to protect against that bottom.
When you talk to your producers, do you have a feeling across the base as to whether or not they're planting more soybeans and fewer corn acres?
In central U.S. here, good corn bean country, I don't see much change from one to the other. I think most of them are going to stay where they've been. I think in fringe areas, you're going to look at a lot less corn and more other things.
I would ask the same thing of you, Brian Stark. You have acreage on your list of topics we ought to discuss.
Yeah, I think the acres is an interesting one. I agree with Pete that the change in the switch is probably going to happen in the outside of the heart of the Corn Belt. Most customers that we talk are talking 5 to 10% at most, not big changes in the middle, but the outskirts. And I think we've even looked at the fact of the way we've exported milo or sorghum, depending on what you want to call it, depending on where you are in the country, that could lead some acre switching to there in some of the areas out in the plains to take away from maybe some soybean acres. But again, it comes down to the fact, not just the acreage for us, but looking at the fact that a trend line yield at 165, we have only been above that one time in the final, which is this past year. We were almost there back in 09. But that's not a slam dunk. So there is a lot of issues that could develop in corn. And I think what we've been educating the grower on is to use minimum price concepts. I think you have to create a floor because there is a lot of production in the world, no doubt. But I think you have to allow some upside because a lot of things haven't been determined during the growing season yet.
Okay, so teach me. I don't know how to work one. What is a minimum price contract?
Okay, well, let's just start with the insurance. Your revenue base is the cheapest put on the market a producer can use. So obviously we would recommend 80-85% insurance to a grower. And then you can finance that by selling an out of the money call. Let's say we come in at a 410 type average. Let's look at some 470, 480 December or even March if the producer has bin storage to finance that insurance. That's one mechanism. There's ways you could buy puts and sell calls the same way on the Board of Trade. I think that's the type of flexibility we want to look at, not price fixing in the corn market right now as our concept, allowing some upside in case things change during the growing season.
And so effectively, when you've done that, what have you done for them? What is the flexibility they've gained?
The flexibility is that they've created a net floor, their put less their cost, but they've also cheapened it up and allowed some upside. They've capped the upside, but they could have as much as 50 to 75 cents of upside to execute on if the market were to rally.
I know I heard a similar thing, I think, Pete, from Kurt Kimmel last night. We were in Galesburg. He was talking about this kind of function. I know your office is thinking in some manner about this as well. And Wayne Nelson, you sell crop insurance. I suspect, because you do both, that you consider these options and how producers can use them in conjunction together to protect either the upside or the downside.
Well, yeah, I think Brian hit the nail right on the head with this idea of basically we've got a put, but it's not a very good put right now with the crop insurance when you take into consideration that it's, you know, we're going to be 80% of our, you know, average yield, you know, and at that lower price. So it is going to take us down under the $4 mark for that put. So we're wanting on the extra acres or what we want to price. We wanted to try to get those, you know, above $4 puts put in place and finance those by, like you said, selling some other calls above the market and maybe even a put below the market as we go along the way to try to do that. And like you said, I think that there is a lot of things can happen. We've got a lot of weather to go through. We've got a lot of political things to go through in the world. And basically, if we could get the RFS standard, the EPA to take us up to a little higher blending rate, that could take a very nice chunk of ethanol usage out that we could actually put on into it. Where we've sort of peaked out and we looked at the long range forecast there and they've sort of got us leveling out on the ethanol usage. But there is a possibility if we get the RFS standard up to 15, that could really help us chunk in some more corn usage.
Yeah, that would depend on the U.S. EPA. On the other hand, there are some in Congress who don't care, I suppose, very much for the RFS, and they tend to be working against it from time to time. Have already this year, so lots to watch there, I suppose. Outlook for them. Speaking of Washington, D.C., Brian Stark is coming up. What's your expectations from it next week?
Well, I think our expectation is that the government obviously is going to give some baseline data. The fact that they don't survey growers, the real meat of the information for the marketplace isn't going to come to the 31st of March, but all eyes are on Washington. That happens every year just to get an idea of how the government looks and views things. I mean, I think the corn is going to come in somewhere in the 88 to 90 million range, and your beans somewhere to that 84 to 86 million area when they forecast their information and extrapolate out. I always are interested in looking at the 10-year baseline data because rarely does it have impact, but it's always interesting to see how the government views production agriculture moving out into the next decade. But ultimately, once you get past that, I think everyone is anticipating the actual survey data from the producer to see, are some of the reports we're hearing from the seed companies of the switching to beans, is that really going to fulfill itself? And ultimately, once you get past that, I think it really depends on spring weather. If we have a good spring, you may, and the market doesn't completely fall out of bed, you may see some corn acres stay in corn.
Hey, speaking of the acreage, and you mentioned the 84 for soybean acres, and that may be what USDA comes out with. That's what they had in their long-term projections, at least, and what their long-term projections and the ag form would be two different items. If it is truly at 84, rather than the 88 that Informa has had, much of the trade is using, is November trading an 88 million acre corn or bean crop, or is it trading a much lower number?
That is a million-dollar question. I think it's probably somewhere in between. The other gentlemen, Pete and Wayne, may feel differently than I do, but I think it's somewhere in the middle, partly because the market is waiting to see the final numbers from the South American crop before we take a next step lower. I really think that, you know, if you intend to plant that 86 to 88 million number, then we're probably too high and we're probably working our way at some point down to sub $9.
Sub $9. What do you think, Pete? That low enough, or does it have to go lower than that?
Well, if we plant 88 million acres, it's got to go lower than that. So I don't think we're looking at that right now. I think you're like Brian said, you're looking at, you know, 85, 86, not 88. If you're going to plant 88 million acres, the carry out would help shove those prices a lot lower than they are. So I think the sub 9 is, 875 to 9 is a place we could go to. I think we came from 920 last fall and went up almost to 11. We came back down, we've bounced up, and now we're trying to hang around where we're at. So I think until we get more numbers out of South America, we're just going to be kind of trading how big is that crop going to be before we decide what we're going to plant.
What is the size of that crop, do you suppose, Wayne Nelson?
Numbers kicked out on Thursday there that they had lowered their bean crop a little bit in Brazil, basically about the same as what the USDA said on Tuesday. So that's right along in the line. It was above what they were thinking on the low side of things. We were sort of surprised to see beans carry up on Thursday and close higher on the day after that. Had it not been for the dollar falling out of bed a little bit here and the crude oil getting some strength, I think the beans would have been just steady on the day.
Yeah, so let's stay with you because the outside markets are something I know that you watch. The U.S. dollar is and crude oil both have been on your radar and many people's for quite some time. And they have something to do, of course, with Ukraine and Russia. How do you put it all together and what makes sense and what are you watching most closely?
Well, I think you mentioned a couple things there. Ukraine, of course, there's a deal that was inked supposedly to have a treaty for a ceasefire. That didn't work so well the first time with the same people signing it, but we hope for much better results this time. But I think that's where we saw a lot of the inflation or whatever, the strength of the dollar fade away today with the idea that we're going to see we're not alone out there that stabilizes the rest of the world a little bit if we're not in war with Russia. The other thing is the crude oil. We've seen a bounce. We looked this last week. The crude oil reserves or on-hand gallons here in the U.S. is as high as it's been since 1931, even with 80 wells going offline last week. So we have seen a big buildup of oil. We continue to see gas prices. I think we went up about 27 cents this week on gas prices. While we actually continue to pump less oil and still have great big reserves, we saw Kuwait coming in and saying that they're going to lower prices a little bit to try to keep a bigger share of the market. So we look for the crude oil to probably sort of stalemate out here in the mid-50s and then probably drop back below that if we continue to keep producing worldwide.
Hey, Brian Stark, when you take the new crude oil price level here in the mid-50s and put that together with the production of ethanol in the United States from corn, the 75 million bushel increase that was reported on the WASDE numbers on Tuesday, what does it tell you, if anything, about that market space?
Well, I think the increase was a little interesting. I don't think, from our perspective, we're that aggressive with the ethanol component of demand on the corn balance sheet simply because of what we've seen in the energy markets and the fact that deferred margins are not very good. They actually decline, and most of what the opportunities are lie in the spot. It'll be interesting to see if it rolls forward. What we thought would happen, where that increase would show up, would be in exports. I still think that the way we've exported another big number announced today, that we could see the government raise corn exports. And eventually, surprisingly enough, with the decrease in 25 million bushels in feed usage, which rarely happens in a February S&D report, could signify maybe some decrease in feed usage offsetting increase in export here down the road. So ultimately, the government's probably going to fall within 1.7, 1.8, at the low end of the carryout, maybe even higher depending on how low feed usage gets lowered. But the ethanol definitely was a surprise, and I don't know if we can reach that that estimate.
So you're of a mind, how much lower, how many bushels can we lose on the ending stocks yet? We're at 1.822 or something thereabouts.
I would say at most another 100 million. That'd be at most. I think the question becomes is feed usage. You know, in the last few years, the largest percentage of our usage tends to be in the first quarter, and it tails off. That's kind of been the norm. I would suspect, depending on how much we lose in the last three quarters this year, we may not see a decrease of the overall supply. We may actually go back up if they end up cutting in feed usage another couple hundred million.
Mm-hmm. Pete, what did you think of the final ending stocks number? They did drop it, and it was mostly the ethanol usage that changed that for corn.
Yeah, and then that feed usage also you know, I agree with that feed usage not being that could help hold stocks up on the thing, but I just don't see it going much lower on the stocks from either the ethanol or the feed usage.
One other number, Pete, that they dealt with on the WASDE report, of course, was the export figure for soybeans, which was really strong to begin with, and they added an additional 20 million bushels to that figure and pushed it up, what, to 1.9 something or other. So it's a big number.
It is a big number, and my question there is what's going to happen when everybody switches to South America? How much of that is going to get shuttled from here to South America? you know, we always pre-sell way ahead here because of South America, but when their big crop takes over and they can buy it a lot cheaper, how much of that will be canceled or moved from this destination to that, because people that are selling it have places there also where they can ship it out of at a much cheaper price.
Wayne, when you look up and down the Mississippi River, do we still see that soybeans are moving pretty well at this point? I mean, is there demand?
You know, I think the demand has been very good for beans. The exporter is short-bought. A lot of the processes are short-bought. They priced some early thinking it was going to be a big crop. We're continuing to see China come to us. Look at the sales we had for this week when we didn't think by this point in time they would still be aggressively buying beans from us. Last year they didn't cancel the sales at the end of the year like we thought they would. And basically the bean meal, Argentina is generally the one that puts the bean meal into the world market, and their farmers have been very, very tight holders because of the dollar valuation of their currency. And if they continue along with the Brazilian farmers to hang a little bit tight, we might still be the best grocery store that's got bean meal on the shelves to come into, and that might help keep our bean market stable. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily going to happen for sure, but it's sure one of the things we're looking at. We know that the processor bids for what the harvest we said we had have been extremely strong. I mean, the basis levels on beans and bean meal has hung in there a lot better than most of us thought it would at this point in time.
Okay, so finally, let's take up two things. We'll get a final comment from each of you here in a bit, but I would like to know if you have changed your stance in the marketplace over the last 4 weeks, whether you've gone from really bearish to something different, if you were really bearish to begin with, and why that would be the case. Maybe we can start with you, Pete Manhart.
I think that the acre change won't be as big, so that people that were really bullish corn, and I kind of was, were saying, well, you know, we're going to have those acres anyway, so I'm not quite as bullish for corn down the road. And I think because of that, I think less acres of beans, so that beans won't go as low as a lot of people predicted. I still think we're just kind of in a sideways until we find more out about what the actual stuff was in South America. But I'm not near as bearish beans. I still think they have a chance to go back to where they came from. And on corn, that 440-50 at the top end, I don't know that we can get there. But if we have any kind of weather problems, all kinds of things could happen. But with just normal weather, I don't see us going that far up on corn, because I just don't think we'll have that few of acreage of corn.
Brian Stark.
I'm going to take the opposite view. I still maintain my bearishness in the bean complex. I think it's predicted based on the fact that we're looking at a very big South American crop. They lowered, like Wayne alluded to earlier, they lowered a million metric ton off Brazil's numbers, but offset that with a million metric ton increase in Argentina. I still think that crop is going to weigh on the world. Even if we don't see a major acreage switch, I still think any normal weather drowns us in oil seeds. That is the biggest risk to the grower. I still maintain that we have to sell rallies. On corn, I'm more leaning towards the minimum price type concept because, again, going back to the yield, we have not been successful 2 years in a row having such a big yield like that. Regardless of the acre switches, I think there's potential for corn to potentially rally into that 450 mark into the summertime. So I guess that's where I'm friendly corn and still bearish beans.
And Wayne Nelson.
Well, I agree with Brian. I think that basically along the way that when we finally get switched over to South America, the world is going to be awash in oil seeds, and we're going to see a sell-off from wherever we started at. It might not be as low as what we think it would to start with. We could rally a little bit before we get there. The corn market, it's going to depend all on weather and what's going on, and a whole lot what happens in Ukraine. But basically, we've got a bottom under both of these markets now until we see the planting intentions.
And Wayne, do you have a final word for me for the day?
Well, I think that Brian said it best. We sell some rallies, and we try to leave the top side open.
Brian, you said it best, but do you have another word to pass along?
I would echo Wayne's comments. I think that's the minimum price type concepts, especially in corn, is the way to go. And especially on the old crop side, take advantage of strong basis upticks while movement is not that great, because eventually all this corn has to come to market.
And Pete Manhart.
Well, I'm still bearish those beans, just maybe not quite as bad as I was before, but I think I agree with both of them that when anytime we bounce, we need to be either protecting that price or selling more into those bounces. And with the world supply being big and getting bigger, I don't see us going very far to the upside anytime unless it's a severe, some kind of weather problem.
Pete Manhart, of course, is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and joins us here on Commodity Week, along with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities and Brian Stark of the Andersons. Wraps up this February 12th edition. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Please do visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find the way to buy your tickets for all-day Ag Outlook, 217-333-7300, just $25 for the March 10th event.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.